طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح، طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح من مخيم.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly 45-minute segment of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's continuing occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program presents news and analysis from the Palestinian perspective, a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. This Week in Palestine was created by Sharif Pham and continued in his memory by a group of his colleagues. This is John Roberts. This morning we will take an in-depth look at the call for the academic boycott of Israeli educational institutions as called for by the American Studies Association, the ASA. This call has led to an enormous flap on several U.S. campuses, as well as a welcomed broad discussion of academic freedom. We will try to get behind that discussion by tuning into a fascinating recorded press conference by an organization called Irish Academics for Palestine in Dublin, Ireland, where Irish academics explain to the media why they are calling for a similar nationwide boycott of Israeli academic institutions in Ireland. It includes an examination of the historic patterns of discrimination against Palestinian academics inherent in the Israeli system, as well as a look at the principles of academic freedom. Joining the Irish academics is a Palestinian professor and author, and an Israeli academic, both of whom add important context to the discussion. Many of the discussions of academic freedom that we have seen concerning the ASA call for the academic boycott have dealt with the principles of academic freedom without the needed context of political reality. That is provided here. The coverage of the Academics for Palestine press conference includes the introduction of all of the participating professors and their full presentations, as well as a portion of the question and answer period. Here is the press conference by Academics for Palestine from Dublin, Ireland.
I'd like to welcome you all here today to the launch of Academics for Palestine.
There's room up front here.
We're also launching an academic boycott of Israel pledge signed by almost 140 Irish academics. Some of them are here, and we're also launching a pamphlet entitled Academia Against Apartheid, a case for an academic boycott of Israel. I'm Jim Roach. I teach architecture at the DIT, and I'm chair of Academics for Palestine. I'll just read the pledge out to people. In response to the call from Palestinian civil society for an academic boycott of Israel, we pledge not to engage in any professional association with Israeli academic research and state institutions, and with those representing these institutions, until such time as Israel complies with international law and universal principle of human rights. Before I introduce our four speakers, I'd like to read two messages from Palestine Israel. The first is from Omar Barghouti from the Palestinian Campaign for the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel. And he says, that's called PACB, and all its partners in the wider BDS movement salute Irish academics who have signed on this pledge to honour the Palestinian boycott of Israeli academic and state institutions. This is further evidence that the people of Ireland keenly understand the cruelty of colonialism from their own history and who appreciate the immense value of international solidarity in resisting colonial rule, are again standing on the right side of history, supporting this non-violent movement for Palestinian freedom, justice and equality, as they had done against apartheid South Africa. Ending complicity in Israel's regime of occupation, colonialism and apartheid, as this pledge reiterates, must include a principled stance against crossing our academic boycott picket line. Israel's universities are deeply complicit in planning, implementing, justifying and whitewashing Israel's grave violations of international law and human rights. We count on conscientious academics in Ireland and elsewhere to send a strong message to Israel and its complicit universities that they cannot pursue business as usual in the international arena without first ending all forms of oppression and human rights violations. That's from Omar Barghouti. Slightly shorter, nice message.
Half our copies of that, by the way.
There are copies in the bag. Harry has them. Slightly shorter message from Dr. Ilan Pape, a renowned Israeli historian. The recent pledge by Irish academics to boycott Israeli academic institutions is yet another landmark in the growing international refusal to allow Israel to continue its oppressive policies against the Palestinians. History will judge each of those who bravely stood alongside the Palestinians in their just struggle for peace and justice as playing a crucial role in ending yet another evil chapter in human history. So I'd like now to introduce our speakers. We have two Irish academics and a Palestinian and Israeli academic. I'm very pleased to have you all here. Firstly, Conor McCarthy, lecturer in English at NUIN in Maynooth, founder member of the Ireland-Palestine Solidarity Campaign, author of a book entitled Cambridge Introduction to Edward Said. Dr. Gadda Carmi, leading Palestinian academic and writer, was born in Jerusalem. She is research fellow at the Institute of Arab and Islamic Studies at the University of Exeter, England. Her work is focused on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, which she has taught and researched for many years. Her recent books include The White Lettland Memoir, In Search of Fatima, and Married to Another Man, Israel's Dilemma in Palestine. Professor Chaim Breshit, an Israeli citizen, was born to Polish-Jewish Holocaust survivors in an Italian refugee camp. A filmmaker, photographer, and film studies scholar, who's Dean of the School of Media, Film and Cultural Studies at Sapir College Israel. And then from 2001, Professor of Film, Culture and Media Studies at the School of Humanities and Social Sciences, University of East London. He now teaches at School of Oriental and African Studies, SOAS, in London. His books include Introduction to the Holocaust with Stuart Hood. His films include State of Danger, a documentary on the First Palestinian Intifada. Last but by no means least, Dr. Andy Story is a lecturer in the School of Politics and International Relations in UCD. He's the chairperson of the Justice and Human Rights NGO Action from Ireland, known as AFRI, and founder and spokesperson for the Economic Justice Coalition, Debt Justice, I beg your pardon, Economic Justice Coalition called Debt Justice Coalition. Please, can you welcome our guests? Each of them will speak for kind of 3 to 4 minutes, starting from this side, moving along, and then I'll share the questions from the floor. So, handing over to Conor first.
Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit about academics for Palestine under 4 headings, if you want, who we are, how AFP was formed, what we do or what we are doing, and then lastly and most generally, why academics and why academic institutions. We're a voluntary group of Irish academics from both north and south. We include members from all the major Irish third level institutions. We support the Palestinian struggle for human and civil rights. We're critical of the complicity of Israeli universities in the occupation and in abuses of Palestinian rights. We believe that Irish and EU university institutions and institutions, state institutions more broadly, should not be linked to Israeli ones while Israel continues to abuse human rights and international law. Academics for Palestine was formed last year in the wake of the TUI resolution to boycott Israeli academia last year to help create awareness of the boycott campaign in amongst Irish academics and to create awareness more broadly of the Israel-Palestine question. We believe that, in fact, there is urgent need for discussion in Irish universities around the matter of the boycott. Irish academics, as part of Irish civil society and as part of the global civil community, need to stand up, we believe, for universal principles of human rights and justice and to see that their institutions do not violate these principles. What do we do? Well, as you've heard from Jim, from my colleague, we've already engaged in extensive discussion with many of our colleagues. We now have a list of nearly 140 signatories who have signed a pledge committing themselves, the pledge that you've heard, committing themselves to boycott Israeli academic institutions. This commitment would include, would preclude, applying for joint funding, for example, with Israeli institutions in the context of the current EU Horizon 2020 programme. We'll maintain and seek to expand this list of signatories by organising meetings, by holding discussions and events on third-level campuses all around the country. We do realise that many academics sincerely are unsure of or are sceptical of the efficacy or the moral rightness of the academic boycott, and we wish to maintain contact and discussion with our colleagues who feel that way. We'll keep members informed about developments in Israel-Palestine. We'll encourage unions and professional academic bodies to take a leading role in the academic boycott, just as they did in regard to apartheid South Africa. And lastly, why academics and why academic institutions? Intellectuals, to use a very heavy-duty word, some of whom are academics, are experts in legitimacy. They provide education, we believe, skills, expertise, knowledge, accreditation to their societies. Societies, modern democratic societies, attain, I think, self-definition and cultural and social density partly by way of the work of their intellectuals. The task, however, of critical intellectuals in regard to Israel-Palestine is to expose the spurious legitimacy of the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza. The academic boycott is a legal and a peaceful way for Irish academics to take courage, to encourage their Israeli counterparts to distance themselves from the occupation and to show solidarity with their Palestinian counterparts. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Dr. Gabriel Carving, our esteemed guest.
First of all, good morning, everybody. And I cannot tell you how much I welcome this initiative on the part of Irish academics. And I speak here as a Palestinian and as somebody aware throughout my life that we, the Palestinians, never enjoyed the support of any state, major power, or even a major institution in this world. In the end, our case, the people we look to, the areas we look to for support in our struggle against injustice, are civil society. We learnt through a very painful process that waiting for governments to help, waiting for formal official bodies to understand that a great injustice had been committed in Palestine in 1948, and that everything we see today, the occupation of the post-1967 territories, is only the result of what happened in 1948. A great injustice was committed. We waited for a very long time for people at the official level to understand that, to take up the struggle with us, to help us. It never happened. So in the end, through a very, very hard road, we learnt that our true friends resided not in officialdom, not in states which have interests, but in decent, ordinary people, because that's, I think, what we are too. And hence the call to boycott, for boycott, which appeared from the Palestinian civil society in 2004 and has taken off since then. To me, looking at you here today, it represents a very real and optimistic change in what had been a very dark scenario. Therefore, I, of course, repeat what has been said already, that I can do nothing more than urge you to spread this word, to recruit as many fellow academics as possible, to explain what this boycott is about. And it is not about not talking to Israelis, and it is not about excluding supporters from amongst the Israeli community. Certainly not. Haim wouldn't be here today, our esteemed colleague and a dear friend, if that had been the case. Of course, it's not. The reality is that when the day comes that Israeli academics stand up and be counted for their silent or active complicity in what has been going on, that will be the day when we will see something very welcome. Finally, because I don't want to take up too much time, I think the message is clear. Finally, I just want to draw people's attention again that we are operating you and I, the Palestinians, are operating within a global context in which Israel enjoys extraordinary support. There can be no historical parallel for a state that behaves in this way and is rewarded. It's extraordinary, isn't it? That reward has kept Israel going. It enables it to continue its violations because it knows it has impunity, and more than impunity, it has encouragement and support. Look at Horizon 2020, which has just been mentioned. How on earth is it that Israel, a non-European country, could possibly be allowed to apply and compete with European countries for this vast pot of money? It is an indication of the obduracy, blindness, cowardice, self-interest, whatever you want to call it, at official level. That we have to fight, too. It's not enough to just support colleagues under occupation. That, of course, is crucial, but one has to take on these entrenched centers of power which keep this whole show on the road. Thank you.
I'm Bereshit, our Israeli citizen.
It is always very nice to be invited to speak in Dublin, the place that knew more about the British Empire and its oppression than any other. And, of course, it is that same empire that created the problem in Palestine. Now, we all probably heard Tom Crew and many like him arguing that we should actually cede our civic responsibility, we should cede action to international bodies, to governments, and to the very, very same organizations that created the problem, be it the Balfour Declaration, be it the UN in Resolution 181, the different empires that since then have supported Israel uncritically and fully. And now, of course, the UK, US, and EU. I mean, the EU is probably the greatest supporter of Israel. We think about the US, but actually it is the EU. Which, you know, both your country and ours is are members of the EU. We are all paying for the Israeli occupation, directly and indirectly, and this must stop. So I want to say that we are welcoming, like Omar Barghouti and the Palestinians, we are welcoming the fact that in this country there is and a civic action of citizens and academics who take up their responsibility. And if you remember, Mandela said that none of us can be free until Palestine is free. He understood that very early in his career, and he made a lot of people, including myself, understand it, because I joined the campaign through the anti-apartheid. I found Palestine as an Israeli through anti-apartheid. So I think this is a really great lesson. And people are saying boycott doesn't work. Well, boycott does work. We have many examples. And indeed, the Zionists always are against boycott. They fought the boycott against the Nazis in the 30s and succeeded in keeping Hitler in power at the point that he could have been brought down. And this is very well documented. So boycotts are exactly where citizens of many countries come together and say, we will not act with arms, we will not act with violence, we will act in all the civic ways that the law offers us, and will bring about the end of injustice. And this has worked in a number of places, not in, just in South Africa. And I think it is working already in Palestine, or working already in the Israeli context. I wanted also to say that you will be told two things immediately after this launch. One, that you're anti-Semites. Well, I'm being called anti-Semites daily. I don't think it becomes pleasant with time, but you learn to disregard it because this is so bizarre that and kind of cruel that the people who support the weakest people in the Middle East, the weakest people probably on this planet, remember how long this problem is actually continuing for. Are supposedly anti-Semites. I'm called all kind of names apart from Nazi, Kapo, etc. This is the kind of names you will be hearing from the speakers of Israel and Zionism. Disregard it. The other thing is you will be told that Israeli academics are liberal, they are against the occupation, they are at the forefront of fighting the occupation. Well, there is nothing further from the truth. The only time in recent history that this was tested in any meaningful way was a survey of all Israeli academics during the attack on Gaza, the first attack on Gaza in 2008-09. There are about 15,000 Israeli academics. Less than 2% of them are Palestinians. This is also interesting in a country where 22% of citizens are Palestinians. And out of those, 405, you can calculate the odds, it's slightly less than 3% have supported human and academic rights for Palestine. They were not asked to vote against the occupation. If they were asked to vote against the occupation, there would not be 405 academics signing it. So this is the size of the liberal camp in Israel. I know, I've been part of it, and I've met the same people on every demo, and it was boring, and it was dispiriting, but we went on doing it. So there are 405, more or less, good people in Israeli academia, but the rest of them, the 14,500, are supporting the occupation daily by their work, by their reserve service, by the total silence that they have kept, both through their unions as and as individuals and also as parts of institutions, when numerous Palestinian institutes of higher education were closed. And they have never said once a word about academic freedom when it involved Palestinians. Now they want you not to boycott Israel because of academic freedom. Let's call the lie openly.
Thanks very much. If people approve, I will turn on the air conditioning. Is that okay? And it's just over your head there.
Okay. Thanks for the
Last but not least, as I said, Dr. Andy Story from UCD, and then we'll take some questions.
Hi, thank you very much, and it's a real honour to be here, and I'd like to pay a tribute in particular to the authors of this booklet, Academia Against Apartheid, which is also being launched this morning, and it's a fantastic resource. And one of the things that really made clear to me, and as Haim has also spoken about, is the extent to which Israeli academia is not a neutral space. It documents very close links between the Israeli Ministry of Defence, the Israeli military on the one hand, and Israeli academia on the other. For example, Israeli universities providing special scholarships and other benefits to Israeli soldiers, and also working with government ministries to train students overtly in how to propagandise for the state. And the EU has been mentioned here a couple of times already this morning. The EU, that relationship is mediated through the EU-Israel Association Agreement from 2000, and it is ostensibly committed to the promotion of human rights and democracy. Perhaps slightly ironically, I'm actually involved marginally in an EU-funded research project at the moment that is looking at whether EU stated commitments to human rights are lived up to in other aspects of EU policies in terms of coherence. So I think I've got a new case study. But under that, of course, not, under that, the EU doesn't just allow Israel special trading privileges, it also allows it special educational and research privileges. Has been mentioned the ability, extraordinary ability of Israeli institutions to apply for Framework 7, Framework Programme 7 and Horizon 2020 research funding. Israeli institutions have led on over 1,000 EU-funded research projects, many in the areas of aerospace, nuclear development and security more generally, and also has been a participant in a further in excess of 3,000 projects in addition to that. And this is where Irish researchers, or it's one of the areas through which Irish researchers are complicit. So Irish-based researchers have helped their Israeli counterparts, which may be private companies as well as universities, enhance drones. They've helped them develop high-tech weapons, and they've helped Mossad-related counter-terror measures. In total, Irish universities have collaborated with Israel in some 257 projects, 7 of them identified as security in nature, 13 in the area of aerospace. And just to give 3 examples, I'm not picking out these institutions for any reason other than they're the ones who are at the forefront of this. I work in UCD. If there was a UCD one, believe me, I'd be highlighting it. University of Limerick, and there are research projects that's not in the kind of in the, if you like, the cutting edge areas. University of Limerick has worked with an Israeli security company that has links with Mossad, and with an aerospace company that has helped develop surveillance support for the apartheid wall. Academics from Trinity down the road have worked with an Israeli drone manufacturer and with the Israeli International Security and Counterterrorism Agency. Researchers in University College Cork have worked with Technion, one of Israel's major weapons companies. Palestinian academics, as has been mentioned, as well as Palestinian civil society more broadly, have called for European universities to immediately end all research collaboration with Israeli military companies and all Israeli research institutions that are involved in violating international law and human rights. And it's well past time that we heeded that call. Thank you.
Thanks to all our speakers for those introductions. I'd like to open the meeting to questions, and I would just say I've prioritised questions from the mainstream media who are here. So.
Such as it is.
Okay, I thought I would take for 5 seconds. So, who would like to ask a question?
I have a question.
Greg.
Yeah, Greg Mann at iDrag Productions. I was just looking at a report there by Real News yesterday where they had footage of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, going back to what you said, Chaim. He said in his quotation that they tried to dismantle us with bombs and armies, with terrorism. Now they're using the boycott. And he says that the boycotters, and they're very succinct about this, are trying to end the Jewish state. And then he goes on to use, saying it's classic anti-Semitism, which you already addressed. Well, I just want to get just a broader picture of the intent of, in response to what Netanyahu was saying there, in terms of the intention of the boycott. As I said, the Zionist polemic will always be that everybody's trying to destroy the Zionist state. What's your response, please?
Well, first of all, I'm not a supporter of Jewish, Muslim, Christian, Hindu, or any other religious states. So, to be clear about my own position, I don't think they are democratic. They are obviously exclusivist, and in that sense, I'm not a supporter of Israel as a Jewish state. Now, of course, I could not support Israel as a Jewish state also, because it is undemocratic on so many levels against the Palestinians. So. At the moment, between the Jordan and the sea, there live about 11.5 million people. Half of them are Palestinians and half of them are Israelis. I didn't say Jews, by the way. because some of the Israelis, of course, are not Jews, not just the Palestinians, including the so-called Soviet Jews. Many of them are, of course, Christians, and they built 200 churches since they came, so there is evidence on the ground. So how are these people to live? Are they going to live in apartheid, which they do at the moment, and which Netanyahu is supporting? Or are they going to live like citizens, like you? I think the answer is clear. What we want, what BRICAP and PACB and I assume also this new organization, which is very welcome, is that people will live in peace and harmony and with full rights. And that, to me, means a secular democratic state in the whole of Palestine that makes no distinction between creed, religion, class, gender, etc. Now, that is not a radical idea. The rest of the world has come to accept it many, many times ever since the French Revolution. So we're not really coming up with radical new ideas here. We're saying if it's good enough for most of the democratic world, it is good enough for Palestine. And actually, nothing short of it will give the Palestinians any rights. So if you're asking, am I against a Jewish state? Yes, because a Jewish Zionist state is exactly what we have at the moment, where no Palestinian, either as an Israeli or as a citizen of no country, has any rights whatsoever. So that's my position personally. As part of BRICAP, I think BRICAP has not taken a position as clearly as that. I think the two of us, Radha and me, are together on this with many others, but not everyone, because it's not that necessary. A lot of the people in the campaign want the end of the occupation. But Radha has already mentioned that the occupation doesn't start in 1967, and for that matter, it doesn't even start in 1948. It starts earlier, because prior to military occupation, there is a colonial occupation. So we are talking about a historical case which has not started yesterday and will not be resolved tomorrow by Netanyahu and Abbas. In that sense, a Jewish Zionist state is unacceptable, not just to the Palestinians, but actually to many Jews like myself. Mm-hmm.
My name is Betty Purcell. I'm with TV3 News, Vincent Brown Show, and I just wanted to ask you, it's a very kind of basic, if you like, question, but you mentioned the very small percentage of Palestinian students within Israeli academia. Could I just ask you about the mechanics of how that discrimination works, how difficult it can be for Palestinian students to achieve academic excellence and to work as equals with Israeli students?
Yeah, it's discrimination against the Palestinians is very deeply embedded in Israeli society, and it starts very early on. Palestinian schools receive less funding than Jewish schools within Israel. So it starts already at the level of primary and secondary education. Now, when they come to apply for university, they suffer a particular disadvantage because of the practice, the policy in Israel, of giving people who have served in the armed forces, as all Israeli Jewish citizens have to do, they have preferential treatment or entry into institutes of higher learning over people who have not served in the army. Now, Palestinian Arabs do not serve in the army, and therefore they are, again, already disadvantaged in trying to get in. But once they have got in, their progress to higher levels of institutional positions is again blocked by quite subtle discrimination. It can be. And they end up with, let me give you a statistic, of all the staff of the institutes of higher education in Israel, only 2% are Palestinian Arab. Now remember that the proportion of Palestinians in Israel is 20 to 22%. Only 2% ever attain these higher levels. So that's at the sort of formal level. Now at the anecdotal level, there are hundreds and millions of examples where discrimination operates in attitude, in discouragement, in all of that. Finally, remember something very important, the language of instruction in universities in Israel is Hebrew. Now, Palestinians are immediately at a disadvantage in terms of language. So it's a multi-layered system of discrimination which operates against Palestinians receiving the same sort of education.
Could I add to this on the language of instruction? It goes further. Of course, Arabic is one of the three official languages of Israel, together with English. If you, as an MA or PhD student, want to write your dissertation in English, there's no problem. If you want to write it in Arabic, forget it. Mm-hmm. So this is an official language of Israel, which actually is mainly present by its absence from the streets, from road signs, from everywhere. Yeah, and like the names of villages that were Hebrewized, that also happens to the language. Now, the other thing, of course, is that you need to open any Israeli press publication, either in the university section or in the job section, to find that actually at the end of all qualifications needed for applicants to present is serving in the army. It's an automatic requirement. It doesn't say you have to be a non-Palestinian. You don't have to do that. You just have to say serving in the army. So that's very simple, neat way of doing that. The other thing, of course, which is very important, is that Palestinians cannot study most of the topics. For example, if you wanted to study nuclear physics, I don't think you should go to an Israeli university, because you will not be considered. If you wanted to study aeronautics, you will not be considered. You will not be accepted. If you wanted to study chemistry, you know, of course, why would we take any Arab to study chemistry? They'll make bombs, you know. So that kind of thinking is behind the selection process in every single Israeli university. And to end is to mention that there is not a single Israeli university which is not run by army generals, either at the level of the vice chancellor or at the level of the president or both. I have never worked, I've worked in four Israeli universities, and not one of them was run by civilians. Now, how many British or Irish universities are run by army generals? You know, just ask yourself, what kind of society is this? And what kind of outlook is developed by those army generals running those universities?
First of all, Betty, thanks for coming. Can I just add something on that?
Sure.
It's on page 10-11 of the pamphlet. The thing called psychometric tests, and this was shocking when I read this, they're used by the Israeli universities to stop Palestinian students from entering university, since these students do worse in these tests. The Israeli state abolished them in 2003, but immediately reintroduced them. The reason for this, as an official explained, was that in the absence of such tests, too many Palestinian school children were getting into university. So yet another example of how it is so difficult for Palestinians to develop academically. Elaine. Question.
Yeah, I have a question for that. You talked about academic institutions within Israel. Could you say something about the impact of the academic, the impact of the occupation on academic institutions in the West Bank, Gaza, and the complicity of the Israeli academy?
Well, of course, that's what this whole issue is about, isn't it? The whole issue of academics showing solidarity with the Palestinian academics because of the difficulties that they face. There's a whole list of the problems that face Palestinian academics, which are well documented. But if one were to try and sum up in a place like this, basically, Palestinian universities, the teachers and the students do not operate in an environment where they can receive their education freely and without interference from the army. It's as simple as that. Now, the Israeli army is able to close universities without any notice, without any reason given. The closure of universities, which is, of course, I don't have to tell you how disruptive that is to anybody trying to teach. Students and lecturers trying to get to their classes, trying to get to work, are obstructed by checkpoints. And Beer Zeit University is a prime example of the kind of restrictions that have been placed on that university by the Israeli authorities. So you have closures, you have checkpoints which prevent freedom of movement, you have the fact that students who receive scholarships and grants from grant-giving bodies abroad often are prevented from taking up those scholarships because they're not allowed to leave. The best example of that occurs in Gaza, which is under a siege in which freedom of movement is severely restricted. And then, of course, you have the arbitrary arrest and imprisonment of students, of staff, and, of course, that holds up education. The freedom of movement between Gaza and the West Bank has been severely disrupted. Even when students from Gaza could go and study in the West Bank, they might be prevented from either going for the whole year or part of the year, or cannot return once they've gone to the West Bank. So it is a, really, I tell you, it is a diabolical system which is worked out with the most extraordinary sadism. I know of nothing like this, where every attempt by Palestinians to receive a decent education is obstructed in a variety of ways. Now, this is, I know I've left out a long list of other problems and difficulties, but I think the message is that the restrictions on the freedom of movement of Palestinian engaged in education, either in teaching or in receiving education, makes education very difficult for them. And of course, there is the whole issue of bombing. I mean, you have to remember that during the Gaza assault in 2008, parts of universities in Gaza were bombed, schools were bombed, and could not be rebuilt because of the ban on building materials entering through the siege, the besieged Gaza. And the most absurd thing of all, that entry of writing paper and pencils was forbidden by the Israeli authority. It's among a list of things that couldn't enter into besieged Gaza, including, by the way, spaghetti and coriander. you know, so it really is extremely severe. And then there was a second part to your question.
Just the complicity of the Israeli academy in these actions.
Indeed. Now, one of the things that really annoys me about, apart from the fact, of course, that the Israeli academics do nothing about any of this, they don't even sometimes bother to find out anyway, and or they accept it, or they are actively complicit. Because they actually are working with industries which create the materials for surveillance and oppression of the people under occupation. So they're actually directly involved. But quite apart from that, the thing, you know, you'll find this phenomenon, which is you come across Israeli academics who regularly, quotes, meet with their counterparts in Ramallah or somewhere. And these people, and Haim must know them, they turn up and they come over and they're terribly nice and they have meetings and they all talk and they're very understanding, and so they all go home and do nothing. So it is that Palestinians have to put up with. I remember in 2005 coming across a psychologist who had been working on a joint project with a Palestinian psychologist at Bethlehem University, and he told me how terrific this collaboration was and how productive it was and how wonderful it was. But of course, he did absolutely nothing about the fact that the poor man in Bethlehem could never ever meet him in Jerusalem, and he had to go to Bethlehem. I mean, he just accepted that as a sort of part of life. So this is just a tip of an iceberg of massive restriction on academic freedom, which is suffered by Palestinians.
Can I add to this that this?
Oh, please. Yeah.
That this is not started in 1967. Palestinians were under a military government until 1965, between 1948 and 1965. Mm-hmm. The military government, one of its first and most important roles was to vet every single kindergarten and teacher in the Arab minority, as they were called, yeah? So that meant that you could not teach mathematics or Arabic or anything in a school in the Arabic community if the Shin Bet did not vet you. In other words, you had, in many cases, to work for them. There is a very, very long history of using education as a way of both slowing down, stopping, disabling, but also creating the kind of relationship that Israel is so good at, collaboration and so on.
That was a recording of a press conference by the organization Academics for Palestine from Dublin, Ireland. And that is all the time we have this morning. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You will find us here at WZBC 90.3 FM every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. You can also stream us live at www.wzbc.org. Or listen to us at any time via the WZBC archive found on the homepage. Simply click on Archive and go to Sunday morning, 8 a.m., and click on Listen. Each program is on this archive for 2 weeks. You are tuned to WZBC 90.3 FM, Newton, Massachusetts. And this is John Roberts wishing you a good morning.